around mutuality and reciprocity, you know, as the new social contract and the new way to relate to each other.
Give out a website, Farah, for where people can find out about the work you do.
Yes, restoreny.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Farah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Farah Tanis, Executive Director and co-founder of Black Women's Blueprint, Inc. We've been discussing her new op-ed at ES Magazine entitled Decolonizing Black Women's Health Through Land Reparations, which you can read online at esmagazine.org. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can become a subscriber, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Bus is the producer, technical director, and web and social media.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Soul Queens and Blues Kings, making a real concert on Sunday, May 7th from 4:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Norman Boogie Cat, Sylvester, and band bring together regional rhythm and blues acts for a night of music and dance as a benefit for healthcare for all Oregon. Again, that's Soul Queens and Blues Kings making a real concert on Sunday, May 7th from 4:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am honored and privileged to work with him. I am Q War, but I need to say that because I'm pretty lucky to, you know, share the airwaves with this gentleman as often as I'm allowed to. So,
man, that is very
just thought I would say that out loud.
I appreciate that, Q. I feel the same way. But for you listening to us, we have another good show in store for you today. Not as heavy as some. That's a good thing around here. And so stick around. We have a lot to talk about. We are going to be getting you caught up on some stories in the news. We're just going to kind of do some quick hits because oftentimes on this show, we end up complaining about the lack of time and the plethora of stories that are relevant to Black and brown people and marginalized people in this country. And so we're gonna talk about some of the bigger stories that have been in the news cycle. We're also gonna spend some time discussing ways that white supremacy harms white people.
Wow.
Yeah, you might think it's not your problem, but it is. White supremacy is not good for anybody. No supremacy is good for anybody. We're all here together, okay? So we're definitely going to spend some time talking about that. I do want to welcome a new sponsor to the show. You'll hear a bit more about them a little later, but the Unknown Unknown Fashion House is joining our list of sponsors for the show, so we want to salute them. And again, you'll hear a bit more about them later on today. But first and foremost, let's discuss some Ebony Excellence. You?
Shall we?
We shall. So this week's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Hip Hop Weekly Media, and I'll be reading from thatgrapejuice.net. All right. Just weeks after making headlines for crushing King of Rock and Roll Elvis Presley's record for most gold certified songs among male vocalists, Chris Brown has logged in the Recording Industry Association of America's history books for planting R&B's flag in yet another uncharted territory. Believe it or not, only 8 acts in the history of recorded music can boast having scored 20 or more multi-platinum singles in America over their careers. The RIAA qualifies multi-platinum as 2 million or more sold in the United States. At writing, Chris, with exactly 20 to his credit, is the only male singer in the group. Among all acts, his placement follows Lil Wayne, Beyonce, Kanye West, Taylor Swift, Eminem, Drake, and Rihanna. This means that he unseated Elvis, I think, in the third category now, which I think is special because Elvis, for many of you who don't know this, became popular for performing Black music. And for Elvis to be the king of rock and roll has often been considered an affront or a whitewashing of what is indeed Black history. You know, that's not to say that he wasn't insanely popular or anything like that, but that's like calling Eminem the king of rap.
To say that he wasn't talented, exactly what I think he meant, because of course he was popular.
Talented, that's the word I was trying to say. So, absolutely. So, this is something that feels definitely like it qualifies for Ebony Excellence. So, shout out to Chris Brown.
One time for Breezy.
All right. Let's get to the news. All right. Like I said, it's not all heavy stuff.
Yeah, it's an entertaining space that we're in sometimes.
Sometimes.
You know, and this is definitely one of those weeks.
Yeah, yeah. So, first and foremost, Fox News. Fox News had to settle with Dominion Voting Systems for $787.5 million. And I... You had something?
I have plenty. I want you to finish your thought first.
So, you know, in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about how white supremacy affects white people, right? But if you think about it, here's a great example right here. Fox has occupied the far right conservative media facet of this country. There's some others, but they're much, much smaller than Fox. And ever since Obama was elected to office, Fox has moved further right. Now, to anybody that can see with their eyes, hear with their ears, and has a thinking brain, we can see that Fox was responding to a facet of this country, or vice versa, that was responded to Obama's Blackness, right? Not Obama's Democratic Party roots.
Not Obama's politics.
Politics, that's the word I'm trying to say. So that has culminated in this lawsuit. There's a direct lineage there, right? Now, again, to folks looking at this, they're just like, okay, well, Fox News had some bad information. They got held accountable, whatever. That's not what we're talking about here. Indeed, Fox News knowingly went on the air with stuff that wasn't credible. They pushed lies about this company, and they pushed lies about the election.
Now, Ramses, settling is not an admission of guilt.
I'm glad you brought that up, because here's what would have happened. Here's how far gone Fox viewers are. Now, Fox, people that watch Fox are never going to watch Civic Cypher, are never going to listen to Civic Cypher.
And if they do, they're going to jump in the comments and trash us.
Yeah, and that's okay. Listen, man, we pull from reputable sources here. Best you can do, right? And also, we subscribe to the actual reality, the actual shared reality that it includes all of the facts. But I'm glad you brought that up. So, here's what happens no matter what. Here's the effects of white supremacy on white people. Okay. And in this example, we'll say that a huge base of Fox's viewership is white folks. Oftentimes they're male, oftentimes conservative. So.
And then hyper conservative Black folks.
Sure.
But
that's such a tiny number.
Very, very tiny. I'm just
relative
saying
the to ones their overall that do, audience.
It's because it's beneficial to them in some way, not even
personally.
Because they actually believe.
Indeed.
The things that are being said.
So here's what happens. Dominion files a suit against Fox News. and they have all the receipts. As we now know, anybody that doesn't watch Fox News knows this. Anybody that does watch Fox News has no idea, because Fox hasn't even mentioned this, right? Dominion has all the receipts that shows that Fox knew that what they were saying was false, went on the air with it anyway because they didn't want to lose their viewership, right? So they're tangled in the, it's like a snake eating its own tail, right? So had that trial played out, then Fox viewers would have assumed, in my estimation, the same way they assumed when all of the court cases that Donald Trump was involved in during the election lie stuff that he was trying to get off, that all of these judges are somehow corrupt and they're liberal, they're woke and all this sort of stuff, and that Fox would have not got a fair trial there. It's political, it's a witch hunt, blah, blah, blah. So had they gone to court and had to pay as a result of that, that's what their viewers would have taken from it. Fox, however, settling that splits the difference. So they don't have to pay 1.6, which is what they were being sued for. But critically, they have to pay something. And that paying of something is an admission. Now, if it was a dollar, if it was $5 million, something that was just like, you know, not really newsworthy.
It's $787 million.
And a half. Don't forget that extra $500,000. So that is not nothing. That's called consequences. Now, is it what we would have liked to have seen? But we
I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's
right. Because listen, man, what can we do for y'all to not take all those receipts and show them to people? Over $750 million?
Run it.
All right.
Run that.
So yeah, man, that is the settlement amount says more than the receipts would have.
Sure.
Because you're absolutely right. Their base, which has shown that they cannot be shaken, would have called it all nonsense. All a witch hunt. All made up. All fake news.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, we're going to get to their base. You hang on. So, watch this. What we would have wanted, I think me and Q are people that are kind of in the media space, you know, we would have wanted some accountability, because it's not right to outright lie to people for ratings. That's not the reason that we're in this space. I know that much. You know, when we tell hard truths, we do it. We have to eat crow. We have to apologize. We have to, if we make a mistake on this show, we come on the next week and we say it on the same show with the same energy. That officer was not wrong. Officer, and read his name. We've done that on the show, right? So it stands to reason that at least we would hold other journalists to that same standard. So we would have hoped that this would have sank that ship. You know what I mean? Or changed the culture or whatever. We don't mind if you're conservative, but don't lie and don't fearmonger, right? You can have your views, you can have your beliefs, but if they're based in a shared reality, then there's the potential to make progress. If they are not, then you are making it harder for us and for your white conservative viewer base, and they just don't know it yet because you're interested in short-term profits. But here's another little silver lining. In addition to that settlement amount, Tucker Carlson was fired. Now, I mentioned that we would talk about their base, right? Fox's base. Guess what they started calling Fox News after Tucker Carlson was fired? Woke. It's you never can win. And I saw this in a Mad magazine one time. They said you can't ever win with a bigot, right? They will bend reality like Neo in the Matrix. It's the wildest thing. So
that's intense.
Mad magazine?
Fox being woke.
Isn't that crazy? So let's go. So Tucker Carlson, for those that don't know, he's the most popular extreme right media personality.
Are you going to leave out white supremacists?
I was waiting for you to throw that in. Oh, go okay. ahead. he is
hyper bigoted.
Yeah. Very, very, like if you are in the mood to get angry,
extreme
about
right,
nothing,
MAGA sensationalist.
But I will say this, in his time slot, Tucker Carlson has been number one the vast majority of the time. It would be a rare instance where he'd be number two. Now, Tucker Carlson, just so you know, existed in a time slot and in a space where if you take the entire news, cable news media landscape, and you look at everything that's out there, you have some media companies that lean a little bit more left, some, of course, lean a little bit right, and then you have some that are more or less kind of center, politically speaking. There are a lot of media companies that lean left, couple that are center, and really it's just Fox on the right. And so if you take the country's population, viewing population, okay, and you assume a 50-50 split, which isn't true, but you assume a 50-50 split, 50% of the people are going to consume media, news media, that is conservative leaning. 50% is going to consume media that is, conservative leaning and then liberal leaning, right? You have to then split the 50% that's leaning liberal among six news channels, news companies. And then the other 50%, you give it all to Fox. And so this is kind of the phenomenon that has allowed Tucker Carlson and Fox to take up so much of the oxygen in that space.
That paints a very synonymous picture with the way that they vote as well, the way that they show up, right? They are a monolith. They do show up with a singular voice representing a singular cause in mass. Yep. And we are splintered in every direction that you can imagine.
Yeah.
Kind of cannibalizing each other over minuscule issues with very, very low impact, while they, you know, swarm behind their movement and collectively support it. That part is kind of admirable.
They are definitely organized, and they have no problem exploiting the gaps, and there is no shame, and there is no problem on their end with cheating, rewriting the rules in real time, moving the goalposts, anything like that.
Put a pin in that part.
Turn a blind eye to it. No, let's do it now. Come on.
Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas.
Uh-huh.
Was recently discovered to be accepting gifts or money, things that would appear to be bribes from hyper wealthy friends of his.
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time in US history, like when we were teenagers, that would have been like lead the news cycle scandal. Like a Supreme Court justice accepting gifts would have really like flipped the country on its head, and people would have been, you know,
that's
blown
corruption
away.
At highest level.
You know, it didn't even make the ticker. Once upon a time, someone saying, just grab them by the, you guys know the rest, would have instantly disqualified them from consideration to sit in the highest seat in this land. That video came out during his campaign, not after he was president.
And then he won.
And then he won. Things like that would have caused his own party to insist that he step down. You got to resign, man. This is going to make us look too bad. our country, there's a such thing as reaching new heights, and then there's what's happened to us. So divided and extreme in our political beliefs that a very, very large chunk of our humanity has just dissolved. You are with us or against us. There is no nuance. There is no middle. So you said that there's some that are center. They're right. Yeah. It's just they're so far, Fox is so far right that normal right seems center.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it pulls the left more toward the right too.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's what we're going through with our current administration.
Exactly.
You know, all these things that we thought would happen for people who look, think, love, pray, believe like us didn't happen because even the quote unquote left have veered right to center.
So now this is a great aperture into the effects of white supremacy on white people, because indeed Fox News has lied to their audience. Fox News underreports stories that they need to know about, and
or it doesn't report them at all,
or overrepresents things that excite them, right? Under the guise of being a news or a journalistic, you know, enterprise or something like that, and they suffer as a result of it. And I think it's illustrated in their response to the Tucker Carlson firing, because again, them calling Fox woke, you know, woke is like this bad word on the right. We've talked about this on the show before. And strangely enough, as you mentioned, woke is what we would consider just kind of center left. And Fox News being called woke goes to show you just how skewed these people's perception of reality has become. So again, the effects of white supremacy, they don't necessarily always benefit all white people all the time. Now, you can make an argument that some of this is capitalism. We often make that argument here. Mm-hmm. But I think that this is kind of poking its head here and there. So let's move on to some other stories. Kim Potter, the officer convicted of killing Dante Wright, was released from prison after serving 16 months of a 2-year sentence.
The officer convicted,
yeah,
of killing Dante Wright,
dead.
Correct?
Yeah,
he's dead.
And, forever.
And then the jury said, yes, she did it and she was wrong.
Yep.
And then she served 16 months in prison.
And then she's serving arrest on house arrest. She's at home right now. I mean, we don't even have to go on. You know exactly how we feel about that. That can just be the headline. Let's move on. Wow, something that you do need to know about. President Biden formally announced his candidacy for president. He's seeking a second term.
Terrifying.
And so it looks like it's going to be him versus Donald Trump again, because
terrifying.
These are the best two. Man, listen.
Terrifying.
Now Trump is has to go to court for a rape trial now too. That was also in the news this week.
Terrifying.
Not just the finance stuff. What is that thing? The Stormy Daniels stuff. He also has like a rape trial he's dealing with too. And he's just in the news so much for going to court that it didn't even make headlines. But look it up. It's there, I promise. And then little footnote, just because of time, not because it's an actual footnote. Phil Jackson is, give folks a brief overview of Phil Jackson.
Phil Jackson, for those of you who are not sports fans, was the coach of the Michael Jordan era Chicago Bulls and then the Shaq and Kobe era Los Angeles Lakers. One of the winningest coaches in the history of sports, and all of his fame, wealth, and notoriety is tied directly to the success of historically talented black men.
that Phil Jackson. He said that he hasn't watched an NBA game since 2020 because of BLM logos and slogans, and he thinks games shouldn't be political. Now, I do want to mention that Q and I have a much longer conversation about Phil Jackson that can be found on the Black Information Network daily podcast. I implore you to check it out. You can find it on any podcast app. And it should be one of the recent episodes, depending on when you're hearing this. But suffice it to say for now that non-Black people telling Black people how to protest is a slap in the face. Non-Black people telling Black people how long change should take is a slap in the face. Shout out to James Baldwin for educating us.
Amen, amen.
The great ancestor that he is. And I think that it bears mentioning that a person who can be this close to Black people for such a long time, for him to still be able to harbor feelings like this, this is the sort of person that looks at a Colin Kaepernick and says he shouldn't be doing that here. Not accounting for the fact that Kaepernick and everybody who is Black, our whole lives are political. And everybody who doesn't work in sports.
Yeah, through that lens, yes, our whole lives are political. But that political is a very loaded word when used in that context. You know, political used to describe something that's Black. They don't cry no politics when they fly the flag and march out the military.
Say that then.
They cry political when you say stuff like Black Lives Matter.
Right.
So let's be clear on what they mean when they say that.
So now you're all caught up.
And now,
Proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists with journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
If you're just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You guys are once again tuned in to Civic Cypher.
Be sure to keep it close because we still got a lot more show for you. We are going to be discussing more in depth how white supremacy harms white people. And before you start making up your mind on what I'm about to say, a lot of this research came from Forbes magazine. So there, take that. We're also going to be talking about stainless steel and the inventor of stainless steel, because you didn't know that. And I didn't know it either. So we're going to learn together. And so much more. So now we are going to discuss becoming a better ally, B-A-B-A, Baba. And today's Baba, as promised, is sponsored by a brand new sponsor for the show, Unknown Union, the fashion house situated at the intersection of meaning, innovation, and culture. For more information, check unknownunion.com. Good guys. Well, male and female, brother and sister, great, yes, people. Indeed. That's what I want to say. But please check them out if you are into fashion. All right. Today's Baba comes from Newsweek. Thousands of Christians have signed an online. Oh, first off, forgive me. This is a little late, but I did want to mention it. So it'll sound a little dated, but I know that already. Okay. Thousands of Christians have signed an online petition by Faithful America demanding Tennessee House Speaker Cameron Sexton's resignation. The outrage comes as a response to Sexton organizing a vote that expelled two Democratic Tennessee lawmakers from the House. The lawmakers, Representative Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, spoke out of turn when they supported a youth-led protest calling for gun control following the shooting at a Nashville elementary school that left three students and three adults dead. Representative Gloria Johnson also spoke out of turn to participate in the protest. Tennessee Republican lawmakers have been accused of racism after they expelled Jones and Pearson, both Black men. But by one vote, Johnson, who is white, was able to keep her seat. Now, the better ally part of this is the Christians, the thousands of Christians who signed an online petition by Faith of America. Because rarely in this space meaning Civic Cypher, do Q and I both get to shout out Christian folks for behaving in a manner consistent with what we know to be Christ-like. So become a better ally by behaving like the people that you purport to worship.
Once again, amen.
All right, so let's talk about some ways that white supremacy harms white people. Again, a lot of this came from Forbes. A lot of this was some other independent research that we put together for today's show. And I do want to shout out Janice Ghassam Asare, who contributed hugely to what we're talking about today, and in fact wrote some of this stuff. So before we get into this, I think that for much of my life, I thought of it as white supremacy benefiting all white people. And that to be white was to have like a golden ticket, which in many ways it is. In this country, that's to a person like us.
I was going to say, I haven't seen that disproven.
So let me tell you my story. I grew up, I met a kid named Kevin when I was little. Okay. He grew up to become blue like Kev. He was 3 years old when I met him. I was 7 years old, so I was always older than him, his big brother. So all of this stuff, for those that are familiar with the bootleg cap, all that stuff came from my CD books and my jerseys and all that, right? But I would go to his house and spend the night with him, hang out with his family. And Kevin grew up very poor. He grew up in an environment where there were a lot of drugs. He grew up where there was a lot of hopelessness, and a lot of the people that looked like him but older were into criminal activities to get money for drugs or to whatever, to change their station in life. And I spent so much time with him, and of course I spent time in my own house, that I was able to see a lot of similarities. And a lot of the things that I felt were issues in Black life, they weren't not issues in his life. I knew that they would be a bigger issue over here, but that didn't mean that it didn't affect him just the same. Now, I'm going to make this come to life a little bit more as I kind of go through these, but you'll start to see what I mean. So I'll start. One of the ways that white supremacy harms white people: government programs. For those that are familiar with Chelsea Handler, the comedian, she had a 2019 documentary called Hello Privilege, It's Me, Chelsea. In this documentary, Handler visits a group of white women from Orange County, California, and a discussion about white privilege ensues. Women share their belief that people of color receive unearned privileges and unfair advantages in society. In reality, the group that benefits the most from affirmative action programs are actually white women.
And just to be clear, when he says in reality, he doesn't mean in the opinion of Ramses and Q. He means the statistics and the data back that last statement.
All right, let's put this nail in this coffin. The irony of this is that white women, according to reports, are actually some of the staunchest opponents of affirmative action programs. In addition, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reports...
Pause. The U.S. and U.S. Bureau is United States, not us.
Okay. I love when you put that punctuation, you know, that exclamation point there, because it needs to be said. I appreciate that. Again, I'll say it again. The United States Bureau of Labor Statistics,
thank you,
reports that white people are the largest beneficiaries when it comes to government assistance programs. Remember I told you Kevin grew up poor? Now, growing up, there's always been this attack on government assistance programs for families who are having a tough go at life. What they were always trying to do was single out Black families. And if I promise you we can't do it today. Well, I'll do a deep dive one day, maybe for a Way Black History Fact. But trace this all the way back to the Great Depression and see the origin story of these government assistance programs and see how they benefited white people. See how the tax code that was enacted in this country was designed to help white people and harm Black people. Like, there's so much stuff. There's racism in so many different things.
This next line you're about to read,
I'm about to
please skip it.
I'm not going to skip it. But, you know, I love the fact that we do this show because I think that I love the fact that you keep it real. But I can learn all this stuff. I can learn that this country hated me from the moment I was born.
I love the past tense that you put on that. I appreciate and admire you more than you could possibly imagine, sir.
I can't.
Because there's a hopefulness and optimism in Ramses's spirit that is long gone from mine. And there's a balance that's required.
I think that you're a little bit more based in reality and I'm a little bit more optimistic about the future. And that's where we tend to focus our energies. But I think I'll do what you said. I'll read the next line. Racialized phrases like welfare queen have propagated the false narrative that Black people, and particularly Black women, are the ones who unfairly benefit from government programs. Now, we talked about a football player once upon a time on the show who was benefiting from the welfare program, right? I think he was about as white as Casper the Ghost, right? I don't know his name. He was a football dude. He's a famous dude. I know that because I heard his name before. I just don't know his name.
His name is Brett Favre.
That's him. Yep. So
Google Brett Favre.
Is that a welfare queen?
Mississippi welfare.
Because I feel like
there's a lot to unpack there. Have at it.
That sounds like a welfare king to me.
Yeah.
He probably got more money than everybody. But listen, enough of that. And he was already rich.
That part.
But I want to go back and reread this again because it's important to mention this. Some ways white supremacy harms white people. Again, government programs. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that white people are the largest beneficiaries when it comes to assistance programs. In other words, white supremacy, creating the false narrative that Black people are disproportionately benefiting from welfare programs, causing far-right politicians to attack government assistance programs, will cut the knees off of needy white families way more than it will cut the knees off of Black families. Because of the amount of white people that are benefiting from it. Again, check the U.S. Bureau.
And white people who would benefit from such programs and do benefit from such programs vote in contradiction of those benefits. Because
they subscribe.
Not because they don't know that it affects them, that they know that they're benefiting from it, but because they think we are too, not gonna be able to do it.
So again, being white supremacist yourself causes you to maneuver in such a way that it ultimately is to your detriment. All right. I also want to mention the Affordable Health Care Act, which was rebranded by conservatives as Obamacare. We're talking about healthcare again, government programs, right? It helped.
Did you guys hear what Ramses just did? Right? He just did it to mimic what they did. The Affordable Health Care Act. It's very hard to stand opposed to that when you have tens of millions of people that can't go to the doctor when they're sick. It's hard to ask those people to vote for you while you oppose something called the Affordable Health Care Act. Right. But if you can racially charge a group of people that you know will respond the way you want them to with regards to Black people, you call it Obamacare. You know, the Black guy that you guys don't like. It's his program. Forget that it'll benefit you. Just go out there and work against him with us.
Oh, my God. I'm glad you said that, because I remember seeing all of the interviews at that time where people would get interviewed I'm like, so what are your thoughts on Obamacare? Oh, I can't stand Obamacare. The country is going, you know, what are the so what is it about Obamacare that you don't like? Well, I don't know too much about it, but I know that Obamacare is not good for us because, you know, we got to be able to pick our, well, you can pick your doctor under Obamacare. Well, you know, there's some things wrong with it. And I don't know the particulars, but I know, and this is, I remember this was incredibly prevalent at the time. So many people had so much to say about it and they weren't saying anything.
Yeah, those same people are still being interviewed. The same people. Yep. Somehow the reporters are going out and finding the same people
and asking different people them
how they feel
not.
About critical race theory. I hate it. Well, why? I don't know. Oh, okay. Understood.
So watch this. The Affordable Health Care Act helped white families four times as frequently as it helped black families.
Four times doesn't sound like a lot. That's 400% more.
There you go. So for again, people pushing back against it based purely on white supremacist ideals. Like if you want to be critical of a government program, by all means, if you want to help it get in better shape, by all means, we're critical of government programs here, namely the police, right? We're not saying that, but if it's purely based on race and no other factors, then we call that white supremacy. And then you start to see how it works against even our Caucasian brothers and sisters. Because no matter what, I will always say, even these people that hate my guts, you are my brother and you're my sister, and I hope that you find your way. All right, let's move on. Some other ways white supremacy harms white people. It stifles innovation, creates corporate blind spots. I want to share this example that I learned when I was in college. Okay, so humble brag here. I went to school. I have a master's degree, right? Don't need it to talk on the radio, but got one, okay? Went to business school and I learned marketing in my undergrad and did a case study on Colgate.
As in toothpaste?
Toothpaste. Right. I wanted to sell Colgate toothpaste in Mexico. Right? Seems simple. Let's sell in Mexico. There's tons of people there. Let's get some money. Yeah, let's do it.
We already got the U.S. on lock. We might as well.
Get some of that Mexico money.
See what's
pesos.
Cracking in Mexico.
Absolutely, right? Smart move. Except when you don't have diversity, when you have white supremacist ideals, either like in the front of your brain or kind of tucked in the back, where it's
we call those implicit biases.
Implicit biases. There you go. Where you're just like in a room full of white people and you feel surprisingly comfortable. There's nothing missing here. Let's just go to Mexico and do what we do in America, right? What you end up with is putting a product on a shelf called Colgate. Not Colgate, Colgate. And Colgate in Spanish means go hang yourself.
Oh. that'll move a lot of toothpaste.
So
or not.
And that's just one kind of lighthearted example, but there's tons of examples like this where again we're talking about how white supremacy stifles innovation. I'll read a bit more. Research from McKinsey found that racial and ethnic diversity also led to greater financial returns for corporations. One of the main tenets of white supremacy is the belief that whites should live by themselves in a whites-only society. When there is no diversity within a group, the same ideas, thoughts, and beliefs create an echo chamber. Organizations with a homogeneous makeup will find it challenging to remain competitive in the future as the country becomes more racially diverse. In other words, you should probably have somebody on your board, in your C-suite, in your upper management, in your middle management, that looks different from you, no matter what color you are, right? Because we live in a world where there's lots of different colors. And the truth is, global enterprises will survive into the future. This is like the highest tier, the final form of capitalism, is that global corporations will consume everything. That's the only outcome. Once drones start delivering everything, your mom and pop shops down the street, once AI takes all the jobs, global corporations. And how do you sell in Africa where there's high illiteracy rates, you can't put a picture of a baby on baby formula because they think pictures represent what's in the jar. You have to know that. So you need people who have experience beyond your boardroom to inform you that if you put a Gerber baby can of baby food on a shelf, people will look at the baby face and think you blended a baby and put it in a jar. They won't know that it's for baby food because of the high illiteracy.
I mean, that's a hyper literal example, but
thank you.
You guys can translate.
All right, so let's move on. Some other ways white supremacy harms white people: ruining the environment. We all got to live here.
This one, we laugh because the actuality of it is terrifying. This is not a potential outcome. This is a real life happening right now to us tragedy that only happened because of people's personal political agendas tied to their love of capitalist white supremacy. Only.
That's it.
Singularly, because the outcomes have for decades been obvious. And disgustingly avoidable if we weren't so greedy, so short-sighted, and so racist.
Let me make that live.
Please.
All right. Ruining the environment. Some ways white supremacy harms white people. A less understood outcome of white supremacy is that it's harmful to the planet. Hop Hopkins wrote, you can't have climate change without sacrifice zones. And you can't have sacrifice zones without disposable people. And you can't have disposable people without racism. Environmental racism is defined as the disproportionate impact of environmental hazards on people of color. White supremacy supports the belief that whites should have dominance over people of color. This dominance manifests in different ways, including the treating of BIPOC communities as disposable. So let's talk about Flint, Michigan. It's a lot of black folks who live there.
Yeah, shout out to Flint.
Is it all black people though?
Nope.
Some white folks live there.
Absolutely not.
Some white folks live there?
Yeah, but those are the poor whites.
Yeah. Hey, wait.
Well, yeah, but they've been convinced that they have nothing in common with their poor black neighbors.
Well, then let's move on.
So they support policy and politics that are championed by their richer white supremacists, quote unquote, allies, colleagues, cohorts.
It's a weird world we live in.
And they go out and march and vote against their own best interests to continue to support white supremacy. But I'll let you continue.
That's not the only one. We talked about Jackson, Mississippi, and the water there. 80% black, right? But that's not 100% black. Look, we can go all the way back to Hurricane Katrina. The slow, lethargic response there.
Hundreds of thousands of misplaced white people. Maybe millions of misplaced white people.
But because there's a lot of black folks there, it's a lethargic response, a limp-wristed response by the government. Let's talk about fracking on indigenous lands. You know, the long and the short of this is that white folks were affected, are affected,
have will, always been, and will always be affected. Will be.
But there's this narrative that allows white people to insulate themselves from these issues because, again, of implicit bias. And because of the fact that oftentimes our perception is reality, it's perceived that we live in two entirely different Americas. And that's not true. There's one planet, one country. Okay. All right. So let's add a few more points here before we move on. Even if there were no black people, Mexican people, or Hispanic people, or Latin people, Asian people, Native people, right? Even if everybody was white, what we've seen, what history has shown us, is that even white folks will stratify themselves. Who's the blondest? What nation did you come from? You know, this is what white supremacy does. White supremacy will even eat white people. And this is what we're seeing. There's no escape. It is a monster.
I used the word misplaced earlier. I meant displaced white people in all of those communities that suffer from all those problems. Hurricane Katrina, Jackson, Mississippi, and Flint, Michigan with the water, and several other things that have happened throughout our history. What we know is that capitalism preys on the poor, right? And because there are so many more poor than rich people, capitalism should collapse, except if you can take those of us that are white and convince us that our kinship and our bond as being white is more important than the fact that I'm standing on your neck as well, then I can get you to vote and support things that benefit me because I'm also white. I'm rich, you're poor, and so are everyone that you live with and
our
around.
Realities are entirely different.
Yes.
But we have the same skin.
But we're both white. So
that's
don't stand with the Mexican, Asian, and Black people that live in your community. Stand with me.
So let me put another one here. Police brutality. Police brutality is often associated with Black people, but police violence affects white people too. Why do you think the policing culture exists? Why do you think police are so well protected? It's because they need to be protected from Black people. Guess what? It puts a barrier between accountability for white folks too. We saw in Mexico the other day, police kicked in a door in New Mexico, killed a man dead, wrong address. Well, now it's time for the Way Black History Fact. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by Underground Beach Club. From the streets to the beach, for the finest in beachwear, visit undergroundbeachclub.com. All right, today we're talking about James A. Parsons Jr. He was born 1900 and lived through 1989. He was a scientist, inventor, and university professor whose research with rust-resistant metals and iron alloys is credited with leading to the development of stainless steel. During his lifetime, he received several patents pertaining to metals for his achievements. Parsons was highly respected among his peers in the scientific community and widely regarded as one of the nation's leading metallurgists. Just so you know, there's a lot of science words here. I don't know how to say them, so bear with me, all right? Here we go. James Albert Parsons Jr. was born in Dayton, Ohio on May 30th, 1900. His father was a butler in the home of an executive at the Duryeon Company. I think that's it, Duryeon Company, a metals manufacturing firm. When Parsons was young, his extraordinary ability in mathematics came to the attention of his father's employer. Parsons attended Steele High School in Dayton, and after graduating in 1917, turned down an opportunity to attend the United States Naval Academy at Annapolis, Maryland. Instead, he took an interim job at the Duryeon Company as foundry laborer, and in 1918 began his undergraduate studies at the highly competitive Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York. Duryeon provided Parsons with summer employment while he was in college. The 1922 Rensselaer yearbook describes Parsons as hardworking, ambitious, and popular with his peers. His love of music gave him the nickname Jazz, and his dormitory room was a hub for aficionados like himself. He was also known for his love of smoking a big black pipe and being generous with sharing his tobacco with friends. The yearbook notes that Parsons spent a lot of his spare time at the pool and was such a skillful, enthusiastic swimmer that some of his classmates call him Fish Parsons. He studied electrochemistry and electrometallurgy while majoring in electrical engineering and was a member of the AIAA club. All right. After Rensselaer, Parsons returned to his hometown and was hired by Duryeon in 1922, the job of analytical chemist, a position that was certainly more befitted to his credentials and intellect than foundry labor. He worked with aluminum, bronze, and made a lasting contribution to the Aluminum Bronze Foundation. In 1927, Parsons won the prestigious Harmon Foundation Award in Science, the first of its kind for the advances he made with rust-resistant non-corrosive metals. His gold medal was presented by Orville Wright, one of Ohio's most famous sons, and Charles Kettering, an acclaimed engineer, gave the address for the event. During the early 1930s, Parsons continued to rise through the Duryeon Company ranks.
That's Orville Wright of the very famous Wright brothers, correct?
Yeah, that's him. In 1935, Dorion had a reputation as the sole world manufacturer of specific kinds of non-corrosive metals. A 1939 article in the Journal of Negro Education mentions that the president of Dorion wrote Parsons laudatory and appreciative letter, wrote him a laudatory and appreciative letter praising his performance and his valuable development work, as well as commending him for his patents for the firm. With the patents the firm had been credited with, because of Parsons' accomplishments. Citing Parsons' executive ability, the letter indicated that he was not only superlative in his chosen field of electrical engineering, but could hold his own in chemistry and metallurgy. Between 1929 and 1949, Parsons received 8 patents pertaining to the development and application of non-corrosive metals, which were credited to the Dorion Company. In 1929, he received a patent number 1,728,360 on an iron alloy, and 4 years later, he acquired another patent for discovering a way to make silicon iron compounds. In 1934 and 1935, Parsons acquired additional patents for inventing a process treatment of silicon alloy castings. During the 2-year span between 1938 and 1940, Parsons received 3 patents on corrosion-resisting ferrous alloy. Not one to rest on his laurels, he achieved an additional patent on a cementation process for treating metals in 1943. Parsons was awarded his final patent in 1945 for a nickel-based alloy.
Parsons was a bad boy.
Man, I'm skipping a lot of this because I can't even read these words. Listen, he's doing the most. All right. According to Margaret Peters, who interviewed Stevens and has written extensively about the notable Black Ohioans, 6 of the patents were issued solely to Parsons. One was issued to Parsons and Earl Ryder, and another was credited to Parsons and Guy Baker. All of the patents were assigned to the Dorion Company. Parsons' scientific achievements did not go unnoticed by the African-American academic community. Wilberforce University, a historically Black Ohio university, awarded Parsons an honorary doctorate of science at its June 1941 commencement. In the 1940s, Parsons became the chief metallurgist and a laboratory manager at the Dorion Company. Parsons' department, which was comprised of an entirely African-American staff with chemical expertise, researched aluminum, bronze, and tested treating iron and steel to be resistant to the corrosiveness of acids, such as sulfuric and hydrochloric. Parsons was so successful in discovering new measures for testing and protecting metals from corrosion that by 1950, he was widely recognized as one of the nation's leading scientists and expert on rust-resistant metals. James A. Parsons was dedicated to excellence. His patents are a testament to his abilities to achieve beyond the ordinary in his chosen field. His career as a college professor shows his willingness to share his knowledge and skills with future generations of engineers, scientists, and inventors. And I do want to say, because of time being short, we did leave out a little bit about his time as a teacher. And we left out the entire list, the timeline list of his patents. Like I said, I kind of just picked some of those, but
yeah, he got like 9,200 patents. And all of the numbers are in the millions, so we would have been reading for a long time trying to get all
numbers
those off.
Yeah, and this is radio, so the numbers wouldn't have meant nothing to you, but they were patents, suffice it to say. But again, James A. Parsons Jr., another person to look up. Next time you're in your kitchen dealing with your silverware or, you know, whatever, just know that this is kind of the origin story for all of that. And another origin story that I did not know about. You know, and I do want to say this while we got a couple seconds left. A lot of times, really racist white folks try to say that we're trying to say that Black people invented everything. And that's not true. We recognize that white folks invented a lot of stuff and everyone, right? But we want our seat at the table and we want our acknowledgement. So that's what this is for. With that said, that's going to do it for us here on Civic Cypher. So once again, I'm your host, Ramses Jha.
He is, and I am Q Ward.
Thank you again for tuning in, as always. Be sure to lock in with us, all right?
Subscribe, like, comment, share. You can even come on and hate if you want to. We appreciate the engagement. Come talk your stuff.
talk your stuff. All right. And here's how you do it. The main place, YouTube. YouTube.com/CivicCypher, CIVICCIPHER. There is no Y. Also, we're on social media at Civic Cypher. I am Ramses Jha.
I am Q Ward. And that's at Civic Cypher on everything.
Yeah. We made all it real love. Simple. We own it all. Yeah. So, and of course, you can download this in any previous episode from our website, CivicCypher.com. And I think that's about it for me. You got anything else?
I got nothing else for you, bro. Right. Well, I got plenty, but we don't have time.
All right. Well, then in that case, until next time, y'all.
Peace.
Peace. Hey, yo, we handle it. These brothers are fabulous. Dilated, showing you where rhyme travel is. Worlds is spit tune from sunlight to moon. Bussing off stage like gunfight saloons. Pull my mic back, you like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander slash beat expander, here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV.
This is KBOO Portland, listener powered non-corporate community radio.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on
K-B-O-O
Portland. Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Once a Braided River on Tuesday, May 16th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Cinema 21 in Portland. Once a Braided River is a documentary film by Barbara Bernstein. The film tells the story of the Willamette River before it was transformed into a super